Today I'd like to welcome to the PodMD studio Dr. Dixon Woon. Dixon is a urological surgeon. His special interests include robotic surgery, urological cancer, and benign prostatic enlargement. Today we'll be discussing the topic of the imperfect art of PSA testing. We do hope that you enjoy this podcast, but please remember that the advice given here is of a general nature and is not intended as specific advice about any given patient. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the doctor, not of PodMD. If you do have a patient on whom you require specific advice, then please seek that advice from a colleague with appropriate expertise in the area. Dixon, thanks for talking with us today on PodMD.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
The topic for today's discussion is the imperfect art of PSA testing. Dixon, can you just give us an outline of the PSA test?
So first of all, PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen. It's produced by all men. And prostate-specific antigens is an enzyme produced by the prostate cells. And what it does is it liquefies semen to allow sperm to swim freely. And most PSA are carried out of the body in the semen, but a very small amount escaped into the bloodstream.
And is a rise in the PSA always indicative of cancer?
More importantly, is PSA is prostate specific and is not prostate cancer specific. As we know, PSA testing has caused a lot of anxiety and also confusion amongst men and also among GPs. Because whenever someone has a rise PSA, the first thing they think about is prostate cancer. But that's not the case.
So what you're saying is that a rising PSA could be cancer, but not necessarily. What are the other causes of an elevated PSA?
In fact, majority of the causes of a rise PSA are actually benign. For example, increasing in the size of the prostate, which is a natural history of a prostate gland. As we grow older, the prostate continue to grow in size, and therefore the PSA continue to rise. And other causes include infection, inflammation, instrumentation, such as a cystoscopy or having a catheter put in, insult. For example, if you had a DRE or digital rectal examination, if you're riding on a bike or horse, that can increase PSA as well. Injection of certain food, such as spicy food, caffeine-containing drinks, and lastly, intimacy leading to ejaculation can cause a rise in PSA as well. Therefore, beware of how you interpret PSA, and even more importantly, the instruction you give to patients before PSA blood test is performed.
Looking at the scenario where all of those things have been considered and are not relevant, but the test still shows a rise in PSA, what does that really mean?
As a urologist, we never rely on just one PSA reading. We almost have at least one. And the key is not the absolute number, it's more the trend of the PSA, and which we will talk into more details later on about PSA testing overall for men.
So Dixon, when the PSA result comes back, what kind of numbers do cause you alarm?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's the imperfect art of PSA. There's no one normal figure for everyone. Each patient needs to be treated as an individual. You can have a low PSA and still have prostate cancer. And you can have a high PSA, you may not have prostate cancer. The key is we need to discuss with the patient, work out their risk factors, therefore risk profile, their risk of having prostate cancer, and go from there.
And what are the red flags for general practitioners when thinking about a patient profile for prostate cancer risk?
So first is from history. Patient's age, prostate cancer risk is higher in older men. It tend to be 50 plus or above 60. Patient's race, we know that African-American men has higher risk of getting prostate cancer, followed by most Caucasian background patients. And it tend to be lower in the Asian background, but the incidence is also increasing in the Asian population as well. Family history, if you have one first degree relative with a prostate cancer, such as your father, your brothers, then your risk is higher. But certainly second degree relative, such as your uncle or your grandfather, will also increase your risk as well. When I see a patient, I tend to ask them both prostate and also breast cancer, because BRCA genes actually code for both breast and prostate cancer. If they have prostate cancer, if you have one first degree relative, your risk is double. If you have two, your risk is triple. And certainly, there's also certain genetic mutation that run in the family. Now we know more about it, such as the BRCA1 and BRCA2 gene mutation. So this group of patients are at the highest risk compared to a general population.
And Dixon, what is the accuracy of the PSA test for detecting the presence of prostate cancer?
So first of all, when we talk about screening tests, PSA is nothing like the pap smear. As we know, pap smear has a 98% of sensitivity and specificity. For PSA, a one-off PSA testing to detect prostate cancer, setting at 4, only has a sensitivity and specificity of about 75%. Therefore, it is not that reliable if you just do a one-off PSA testing to detect prostate cancer. And hence, we never rely on just one reading.
And are there any guidelines to help us in terms of PSA testing?
So there's been some confusion with when to test PSA, and there's different guidelines in Australia or in America, and also even amongst different medical society, there's some confusion. However, the best way to approach this based on the guideline from the Urological Society of Australia and New Zealand is that all men at the age of 40 should have a PSA testing as a baseline. What it means is that if you have a PSA of less than 0.6 at the age of 40, the risk of having a clinically significant prostate cancer in a lifetime is really low. If you have a PSA of more than 0.6, it doesn't mean that you're going to get prostate cancer, but what it means is this group of patients, we should follow up a bit closely. So what I use in clinical practice is, if I see a man in the age between 40 and 45, I would do a PSA test. If the PSA is less than 1, I'm more relaxed in terms of the serial PSA that I'm going to do down the track. Probably do it every 2 to 3 years. If the PSA is more than 1, I will follow them up a bit more closely, at least once a year, if not more often. And with the aim of early detection of prostate cancer, and therefore provide care, as in provide cure.
So in general, how frequently should the PSA test be done?
So if a patient had a low PSA at the age of 40, for example, less than 1, we can safely repeat the test in 2 years' time, provided the risk profile is low. If the PSA is more than 1, I tend to follow them up once a year. For older patients, then I tend to use the age-adjusted reference range, which we have a table that we tend to follow. Then again, the frequency or the interval of follow-up, again, based on the patient's risk profile and also how keen they are in PSA follow-up.
Okay, Dixon. So in primary care, the general practitioner sets up a risk profile and has done a couple of PSA tests. What are the indications to refer a patient on for specialist assessment?
As I mentioned earlier, there's no one perfect range for PSA testing. In clinical practice, what I suggest is that for any man with a family history, if their PSA is more than 2, then they should be referred on. And for any man without any family history, if the PSA is 3 and above, they should be referred on. And the reason for that is this patient most likely will be suitable to have MRI scanning that will be funded by the MBS. The other important factor is the PSA velocity. If a patient PSA is rising more than 10% per year, that is also a red flag, and that also should be referred on. As for a patient with a PSA between 1.5 and 2, if you're not sure, give me a call. We can always discuss the case because it all depends on the patient risk profile and also whether they have an abnormal digital rectal examination, which I'm more than happy to assess them when I see them.
And what should the general practitioner keep in mind through this whole process? How can they best educate their patients around PSA testing and its implications?
I think the key message to the patient is that if the PSA is elevated, doesn't mean that they have prostate cancer. All it means that is they need more tests to find out why the PSA is high. Secondly, we need to reassure patient that even if prostate cancer is detected, majority of the cases, patients do not need active treatment, as most prostate cancer can be managed with surveillance.
Dixon, thanks again for your time here today in the PodMD studio. Just to sum things up for us, could you identify your 3 key take-home messages from your podcast on the imperfect art of PSA testing?
So number one, there's no one normal range for PSA. PSA testing need to be individualized. Patient need to be risk profile. And we need to rely on serial PSA testing instead of just one-off PSA testing. The second take-home message is, before any PSA testing, we should educate a patient about what the potential finding is and what they should expect. And my third point is, PSA testing is confusing. If you're ever unsure, please refer on, and we're happy to talk to the patient.
Once again, thank you for your time and the insights that you've provided on PSA testing. I've always found it a difficult topic due to the uncertainty of testing and the variability of the guidelines, but you certainly made things a lot clearer for us.
Thank you for having me.